Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to October 5th, 2012, this edition of Education Talk Radio. We're thrilled to have you with us on our K-12 system. We love having you here, and we love all of you listening to all the archives, etc., going over to the website, etc. We're going to have this show archived over at education-talkradio.org in just a couple of minutes. Let me see if I can get that music off. Something's going on here. There we go. There we go. Okay, very good. I apologize for that. Let me reintroduce. Welcome to Education Talk Radio, our K-12 edition, and we're going to have this show archived over at education-talkradio.org. As soon as we're finished with our wonderful guest today, Sue Ballard, who's the president of the American Association of School Librarians, a division of the American Library Association. I'll introduce her for real in just a second. We have some great conversations set up to talk about the state of libraries today in the K-12 world. My name's Larry Jacobs. I'm your host, and I want to especially thank today the folks over at Follett. They want everyone to know about the Follett Challenge starting now. Okay, we did a wonderful show yesterday. Go over to followchallenge.com to learn more about it. Okay, last year's winner, Isabel Chipungo from Ocoee Elementary School in Orange County, Florida, was our guest, along with Britton Follett, talking about all the wonderful things. They've doubled the prizes. Let me just read this to you. Follett is calling all administrators, librarians, teachers, technology specialists this school year. Follett is looking for the most dynamic programs in the United States, Canada, and international schools to take the Follett Challenge. They want to reward top-notch educators who are designing 21st century teaching and learning programs. Show Follett how you are preparing students with the vital skills they'll need for life. A total of $200,000 in Follett products and services is up for grabs with a grand prize of $60,000. So go over to the FollettChallenge.com. Isabel Chipungo, last year's winner down in Florida, won, I think, $30,000, I believe, perhaps even more, of products and services from Follett. They used it to stock their library, et cetera. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. And what she did down there is great, but what you're doing is probably great, too. So please go over to the FollettChallenge.com. Any K-12 school, please. Follett wants to know, how is your school or district preparing students for the demands of the 21st century? Show them and be a winner in the Follett Challenge, FollettChallenge.com. And go listen to our show yesterday, and that will even put it in greater perspective for you. So check it all out. Now I want to bring on our guest today, the one and only Sue Ballard, who is the president of the American Association of School Librarians, a division of the American Library Association. They're located in Chicago, Illinois. She's located in New Hampshire. Okay, she is also an adjunct professor at Simmons College down in Boston in their instructional technology licensure program. Okay, to learn more, go over to ALA.org/AASL for all the information in the world about this wonderful organization. Hi, Sue. How you doing today?
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. Nice to talk to you again.
Well, thank you very much. You're going to pardon me a little bit. I have a terrible head cold this morning.
Oh, goodness. Sorry to hear that.
I was at a big, wonderful conference called EdNet in Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
but flying home on what I like to call the flying tube of typhus, I'm exposed to every germ known to mankind, and it seems to have caught up with me over the last couple of days.
Well, that's a reminder to me to get my flu shot before I fly.
Exactly, and I have to get mine today, too, though it might be a little late to do so, for goodness sakes. And here in New England, I'm in Cornish, Maine. You're down in New Hampshire, and I know that we've all had how much rain have you had down there the last couple of days?
Yeah, it has been rainy. We're supposed to start some clearing today, and
I'm
hoping to get out and look at some of the glorious color that we have now. It's beautiful.
And up here, I'm about, I'll say, an hour and a half north of you, and it's just absolutely spectacular up
mm-hmm.
here. So I hope people are coming up. What we like to call in New England, leaf peepers, right?
That's correct, leaf peepers. I've already got my routes plotted out for the day, so I avoid their traffic.
Right, and the routes are the roadways, not the trees that support the leaves, right?
That's correct.
little synonym there. What do you call that when the two words sound the same, but they're different? Root and root, yes.
A homonym.
A synonym? homonym. Thank you, homonym. Thank you, librarian. I appreciate that, for goodness sakes. You know, yeah, we had a great show yesterday. Isabel Chipungo, who's a media specialist down in Ocoee, Florida, in Orange County, Florida, Ocoee Elementary School. She won the Follow Challenge last year. Mm-hmm. And she's a media specialist / librarian. She went on, talked about all the great things that she's trying to do down there. You know, they have a school down there that's 40% of the kids go home and the family does not speak English.
Yeah.
Okay? And they're just doing everything they can to make it all work. And yesterday, in the middle of the day, yesterday, I had a show with Steve Bell.
I had a chance to listen to that.
Yeah. In fact, I think I sent you the link to it.
Steve, it was Bell great.
And the president of... he's the president of the Association of College and Research Librarians, the higher ed sort of side of ALA, et cetera. And we had a great talk. And one of the things we brought up was that if kids aren't exposed to libraries in the K-12 years and the full expanse of what a library can do for them, it hurts them as they move into college, because pulling stuff off of Wikipedia isn't exactly the answer to learning how to do colorectal operations, as an example.
That's right.
Yeah. Because they're using the Mattel operation game. So with that in mind, I'm going to you're president of AASL, and you know how I feel about libraries. You know how Follett feels about libraries and how most people feel about libraries. But now we've got to find the money for that. So give your spiel. I want to hear you. Why should people care about providing a school library program and making it stick for their communities?
Well, I'm going to pick up on the thread that Stephen and you discussed yesterday, and that is because of the domino effect that occurs for that individual throughout their lifetime. If they don't learn how to learn through the auspices of a school library program that's completely connected to the content and curriculum in a school. A school library sits at the crossroads of the curriculum. It's where all the threads come together, and you might even say that in the best schools, they build programs around the resources of the school library and the connectivity that the school librarian brings in collaborating with fellow teachers and co-designing and co-teaching in terms of instructional units, so that throughout the course of a student's K-12 career, they're consistently building and scaffolding a skill set. So that by the time they leave us at the end of their senior year in high school, either to go into the workplace or to continue with education, that skill set is such that they have a good foundation for further learning or continuing to learn throughout life. They're going to need those skill sets. So I think it's vitally important, and again, as Steve indicated, there's a domino effect. People see kids coming into the college environment who don't get traction in terms of staying. And
traction. He actually said he's at Temple University. We're actually, as I mentioned yesterday, where my wife is an alma mater, and he gets students. And Philadelphia schools are particular. They're a big city school. And they got library problems. K-12.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put it that. I'll call library challenges. Let's be nice. Okay, but he and Temple is a school that pulls a lot of kids locally, and he said that he has seen students, many of them, I got the impression, that come in to Temple University and literally have never been in a library.
Yes, I heard that, and that that is an unfortunate situation, especially in our large urban areas, where again library programs have been kind of left, the field has not been planted in a long time, and unfortunately nothing is growing. So you and I, being New Englanders, know how we have a very short growing season with kids, and we take advantage of it. And the same thing applies, I think, in school situations. We have a short time with kids, really, truly, when you think about it, to get them prepared to be able to deal with the challenges that the 21st century is presenting us. So it's really important that those communities rethink what they have let go and try and rebuild and refresh those programs. I know it's a challenge to them, but I think it does pay learning dividends in the end. It always surprises me that, you know, people think that kids are born with certain skill sets and that they, especially in terms of, you know, real research.
They are. They're born with the ability to poop.
Yes.
Right.
But, you know, it's, you know the old chestnut, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice, practice, practice. It's the same thing with research. You have to give kids continuous opportunities to practice that skill. And when you think, if you break down the word research, search means look. Research means look again. And that's what we're trying to do when we work with kids, to get them to look again, to ask good questions, to build their own knowledge. So we need the time to work with them to do that. And again, it's you need the resources in a school library and the virtual resources, but you also need the personnel to connect them with the ideas and the information and to assist them in that process of guided inquiry.
Well, you really do. And things are changing out there. Not only are we not having libraries, we're having less access to the librarian. And people think that the technology, i.e. the web, okay, mm-hmm. can replace the librarian. But in reality, the web presents everything unfiltered. You have to have the brains to filter things out. I was making
Correct.
A joke about Wikipedia, but for goodness sakes, I can add things to Wikipedia, and I don't know borscht. So for goodness sakes, you know, I mean, it's a great idea, and I use Wikipedia a lot, but I'm older and able to think about all this. You know, I was mentioning yesterday, I'll say it again to give it a plug, my good friend Stu Feierstein is a chair at Columbia University. He wrote a book called Ignorance, a chair of biology at Columbia University, Ignorance, How It Drives Science. And his whole theory is that it's you use the facts to find out what you don't know. Okay. Don't take the facts for granted. Okay, that what you're ignorant of is far more important than what you have knowledge of.
Correct.
Okay, and we don't know 99% of it. His standing line is that he's a neuroscience professor, and he gives his students a 1,600-page textbook they have to buy on beginning of neuroscience, intro to neuroscience. And he said you would think after reading that you'd know everything, and the fact of the matter is they know nothing.
Yes.
Okay, and that's 1,600 pages. They don't know 99% of how the varies of neuroscience work. This mm-hmm. represents the 1% they do know. And that's the whole point of understanding research and a library, you know? On that note, you know, you talked about the person being available, the librarian, et cetera. Obviously, with the educational technology, and Steve brought this up yesterday too, you know, the role of the library and the role of the librarian is really changing. But he still said that there are more students using the library than ever before. And I'll just ask you to comment on that. You know, they have both a physical and a virtual presence. How do you see
Correct.
It shaken down in K-12?
I see the same thing. I think, again, in communities that have supported their libraries where they have vibrant programs, those places have usage figures off the charts, not just in terms of, you know, how many resources people are using, but they're very vibrant classrooms almost, instructional areas. There's a lot of learning going on. But with the advent of technology, now learning can be everywhere. It can be
mm-hmm.
any time, any place, any pace that we want it to occur at.
Nice.
And that's why what Steve had said, too, is that, you know, you can be a student at Temple University and never physically come to the library, but you can still
Right.
have a very meaningful usage of the library through their virtual presence. And so, again, for certain
Ooh,
libraries,
I have a question. If you don't go to the library, how are you going to meet girls?
Well, I also agreed with what Steve said afterwards, though, that there, you know, really learning, there is a social side to learning, and it's a social experience. We've seen that,
That's right.
you know, with the explosion of social networking. But, you know, people, especially I think at the younger ages, need to come together in communities of learning to understand what it means to be human and to have human conversation face-to-face and to have some interaction with one another. So, you know, I think it's a blended learning environment that we're really morphing into. And I think, again, the physical library still has an important place and a role, but also the virtual delivery of resources and services is critically important in this day and age.
What do you, Sue, let me reintroduce you just in case people tuned in. Sue Ballard is the president of AASL, the American Association of School Librarians, the K-12, so to speak, division of the American Library Association. That's located in Chicago, Illinois. Sue does her work out of southern New Hampshire, and she's also an adjunct professor down at Simmons in Boston, Simmons College, in their Instructional Technology Licensure Program. Again, AASL is at ala.org/AASL. And whether you're a teacher, administrator, or parent, the more you know about your library, the more you're going to support it. I suggest you go over there, for goodness sakes. I wanted to talk to you about, and I always love saying this word, Banned Book Week, which is not a week celebrating the school orchestra.
Correct.
One of those homonyms again, you know?
Yes, and it doesn't celebrate banning books either.
Yeah. When I say banned book weeks, it sounds like it's a book about orchestra. This is B-A-N-N-E-D.
Correct.
Banned Book Week. And ASL had banned, AASL had banned Website Awareness Day. And I actually had Michelle, I don't know if you listened, I had Michelle Ludemore on that day talking about
it. I did listen. I always appreciate listening to Michelle. She's very thoughtful and very, very well informed in terms of, you know, how we connect kids with digital resources.
Oh, she's great. Mm-hmm. She really is. And she feels very strongly about you, too, I have to tell you. Okay? But
well,
at any rate, okay, talk to me about how AASL worked to put together and how it all worked out with Banned, again, B-A-N-N-E Day, Forbidden Website Awareness Day. What else is coming up? And, you know, just tell me what happened with that.
Sure.
Because I talked to Michelle before.
Yes. Well, this week, again, as you mentioned, ALA has been observing Banned Book Week throughout the country, and there have been all kinds of activities and materials available to highlight, you know, what it means in a democratic society when we shut down the access to ideas and information. And in conjunction with that, last year, AASL decided to have observation on one day during this week, which was Wednesday of this past week, of Banned Website Awareness Day, because we have been conducting over a number of years a longitudinal study of school libraries and their services through a program called School Libraries Count. And in the past couple of years, we've asked our members to report to us, you know, how are things going in terms of access to digital resources? And the data that we were beginning to get back really highlights that schools are struggling with providing appropriate access to those digital resources because of over-filtering. The audience is probably familiar with some congressional action that has occurred in the past several years, particularly the Child Internet Protection Act, CIPA as it's called, requiring schools to have in place appropriate filtering software. And by appropriate, I mean, we all know, and we get it, that there are some things like pornography that we don't want kids to have access to, and it has nothing to do with our curriculum. So we understand how easy it is sometimes for kids to get to those sites that we probably wouldn't want them to get to. So there is a need to have some kind of a management system in place. However, we seem, as with anything, you know, the pendulum swung a little too far to one side.
Of course.
And these filtering programs, a lot of which have been put in place by schools and are third-party developed, block more than we intended them to do. So the celebration of Banned a Website Awareness Day asks schools to go back and to look at their policies and procedures to make sure that they're not being overly restrictive and not allowing kids to have opportunities and teachers to have opportunities to use materials that are vital. And we also, I think, stand on the principle that...
Sue, I just would like you to... I don't mean to catch you off guard with the next question. Can you think of an example, okay, of something that was banned but really shouldn't have been? Okay,
yes.
that denied access to something important. And, of course, I have to say we all agree pornography and American Nazi Party... Well, Nazi Party writing should probably be
hate
banned.
Groups,
but
or,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I can give you an example because I just got through reading our latest edition of Knowledge Quest, which is our professional journal for our association. And in that journal was a wonderful article co-authored by Henry Jenkins, who is a professor at the University of Southern California, previously at MIT. And he talked about the example of students who were trying to do some work on Herman Melville's classic book about the great white whale. And we all know the name of the book is Moby Dick. But because of the word
this is
Dick,
like a bad this is like a bad seventh grade joke. Please go ahead.
I understand
yeah.
it, you know, yeah. but yeah. that had impact on kids trying to do research on one of the great American novels.
That's unbelievable. And
of a time and place in history that, you know, that particular book represents so beautifully. So there's one example. You're probably familiar with.
And by the way, for the sake of anybody who didn't get it, we should change the name to Moby Richard.
Correct.
Right.
And also, for example, you're familiar with New England and the fabulous poem that, you know, the poem about Paul Revere riding through every Middlesex village and town.
No.
But the fact that Middlesex County ends with the letters S-E-X has sometimes prohibited kids, teachers, from accessing materials. And that's what we mean when we say over-restrictive
software. Let me get this straight. Christopher Columbus sailed the ocean blue, and what he used to navigate across the water was his tent.
The sextant. Right?
As opposed to his sextant. Yeah, you got
yeah
it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's you know, in our zeal to, of course, protect kids, I'm sure
we do.
We want to do that, but
we do. Yeah.
Let's re-look at some of these things. And also, the other point I do want to make that is so critically important is, again, kids need to learn about the misinformation, the disinformation, the malinformation that's out there, and they need to do that in conjunction with a professional person assisting them to become ethical, good digital citizens. And if we can't access materials that allow us to show them how to do that, make good choices, then we're sending them out ill-prepared and unfortunately not in a good place to be in an ever-evolving digital landscape.
You know, when a school, and I don't know if you know this, but when a school, Sue Ballard's president of the American Association of School Librarians, she's our guest today, and Sue, when there's back-to-school night, parents' night,
mm-hmm.
I just thought of this, okay? You always go, you know, you kind of follow your kid's roster for 10 minutes, you go meet the teacher, et cetera, 10 minutes per period, but does anybody ever go, I mean, I know the library's open, but it should be the mandatory inclusion. Do any of the schools do that? I would hope so, for goodness sake.
Many schools, of course, do have the school librarians are available during the school open house evening. Again, as you indicate, a lot of people want to go see their child's teacher. Well, a school librarian is their child's teacher and is their child's teacher for however long that level of education lasts. So if it's a K-6 school, then the school librarian sees that child for 6 years, so they should want to go in and connect and find out about, you know, how that teacher, the library teacher, interacts with other content area or classroom teachers. So, again, whether it's mandatory in schools, I cannot say, but that's not a bad idea. But, you know, I'm in New Hampshire, live free or die, so I like people to have options.
I live in Maine, but I got to tell you, I love New Hampshire. It's got it's one of the smaller states and the largest state legislature in the country.
That's right.
Okay,
I think
every half block has a state representative, and it's pretty funny. And they make $100 a year.
True.
It is. It's wonderful. I love mm-hmm. it. I love it. It's New Hampshire is absolute true democracy. I love the state. They're live free and die, and the New Hampshire conservatism is not the nouveau conservatism. It's a granite state approach, okay, to, mm-hmm. I'll say it this way, understanding the rights of the people and how the people should be involved in it, et cetera,
That's
et cetera.
Correct.
It's
and
a great state, Republican or Democrat, okay? I just love
right.
that state.
And we tend to be a little frugal. We love duct tape.
Really? I hadn't noticed. But I'm in Maine now, so I have to act like a Mainer, for goodness
right.
sake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your fall forum is coming up, and why don't we just talk about this real quick.
Sure.
October 12th and 13th. That's in, of all places, which I think is interesting, it's Greenville, South Carolina. Just
correct.
Remind people what's coming up. My goodness, that's next week.
It is next week, yeah. I'm very excited about it. And I had previously mentioned that in our Division's Professional Journal Knowledge Quest, there was an article co-authored by Henry Jenkins with from the University of Southern California, formerly at MIT.
Formerly of MIT, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And co-authored that with Elizabeth Loesch, who is at University of California at San Diego. But Henry Jenkins is the keynote speaker. Henry Jenkins, he oversees the work of Project New Media Literacies and Civic Paths, which focuses on youth and political participation. And he... he's done a terrific book called Reading in a Participatory Culture, and he is an expert on participatory culture. So our focus of our conference or our fall forum is transliteracy, and that's meaning, you know, how our kids we all know that it's important to be literate. What do we mean by literate in the 21st century? It's not just reading, writing, you know, computation. It's also digital literacy, financial literacy, all kinds of, you know, media literacies. So we're going to have those conversations with Henry Jenkins at the centerpiece, and we're really looking forward to that. And the forum is held every other year opposite our national conference.
Right.
Yeah, and it's a more focused discussion, whereas at the conference there are many, you know, plenary sessions and general sessions and concurrent sessions.
Are there exhibitors at the conference, or is it strictly
meetings?
Exhibitors are at our
national conference. At
no, I know that, but I meant at the fall forum.
We have a number of corporate partners who are helping to underwrite the event who will be there, but this is not really a traditional conference sort of venue. It's more like a seminar almost. Again, a very focused conversation about a particular topic.
I just always like to know what's going on with these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. And why
it.
Of all places... Okay, why Greenville, South Carolina? That's an interesting choice, I got to tell you. That's
a bit off the beaten track. What we try and do with any of our forums or national conferences is we try.
Not that I have anything against Greenville, South Carolina,
right.
But it is an unusual place for a conference and a school.
Well, again, our division moves our national conference around to different parts of the country on a rotating basis so that members. For example, we were in Minneapolis for our national conference last year. And our next conference will be in Hartford. So that people who are in different geographic locations have an opportunity to come to a face-to-face event. And the same holds true for the forum. The last forum was held out in Portland, Oregon. So this one is on the opposite side of the country, in the South Greenville. And again, the staff, in consultation with the we have a committee of members who plan and execute all of the details for these events. They make a decision on finding a location based on the numbers that we anticipate will be attending and that kind of thing. So that's how the venues get selected, more or less.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and people can learn more. Again, go to ALA.org/AASL, and then conferences and events. You can click through, see all this, then the fall forum, and it'll pop up with everything. Well, do you know if there's going to be any virtual component to that, like if somebody's in Oshkosh and they can't make it?
There will be. We have several virtual locations. We have two in Pennsylvania. We have one in northern Texas and one out in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And so we will be streaming the major events, the keynote and some, you know, big discussion type things to people in those venues. And we have facilitators on site who will be, you know, working with them. So that will be a way of also bringing in other parts of the country and people in more to the face-to-face conversation.
That's really, really nice. And also, we're going to leave in just a couple of minutes, Sue. You'll be back. We have shows scheduled all through the time. But since you're going to be back, I think our next show is December. I think we have that on our book, don't we?
I don't have that on the book, but if
you will by the time we're done. I think saw it in there. Okay. And but if we don't, we will. Okay. And my point is. Next month's November, and I just want you to mention you're partnering with many other organizations, you wrote me, to observe Picture Book Month. And you can learn more about that at picturebookmonth.com. I'm going to go over there right now.
It's a great event, you know, that kind of came out of an offhanded comment that was made in the New York Times that the picture book as a format might have seen its better days, and a lot of people don't agree with that. You know, picture books are something that can be enjoyed by people from, you know, a year old to 90 years old.
Absolutely.
They're a wonderful means of communication and an art form. So AASL is happy to support Picture Book Day, which is going to be observed in November. It's a fabulous opportunity for people to really appreciate that form.
It's really cute, and I'm on the website now, and it's really just kind of cute, I got to tell you.
PictureBookMonth.com. Yeah, well, you might want to talk to those folks, too. They would.
Cute.
It's made really up of a lot of the picture book author illustrators.
Right. I'm noticing that. So that's really fun. I go to picturebookmonth.com, and the AASL's somewhat involved in that. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
We're partnering with them. We want to support their efforts because, of course, we believe, again, one of our common beliefs is that reading is a window to the world, and picture books are a means of reading. They're, you know, kids need to translate those symbolic references as well as anything else. So.
Agreed 100%. Agreed 100%. Sue, thanks a million. I think I have it in my book, and maybe you don't have it in yours. I think I have a December date set up for you.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I'll email you today and let you know that. All right, I'm going to send you this link and send it to everybody at ALA, and they can put it out there.
Okay,
for today's show. Okay, you are great, Susan. I love having you on.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's always fun to talk to you, too.
And you're always welcome. You know that, and we'll set up the next show soon. Okay?
Very good.
Thank you, Sue.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Sue Ballard is the president of AASL, the K-12 side of the American Library Association. You can learn more, and you should. Parents, and actually, let me say, I always say parents, student, teacher, whatever, but also if you pay your taxes to a school district, okay, and you need to know the role of the school library as a citizen of your community. So please check out all the wonderful things they're doing, because Sue is right, the epicenter of learning, as it has been since Alexandria and ancient Egypt, is the library. So please check that out. Again, it's the AASL, the American Association of School Libraries. I want to thank our good friends again over at Follett, okay? Follett asks the question, how is your school or district preparing students for the demands of the 21st century? And you can show Follett and then become a winner in the Follett Challenge. And you'll learn more at FollettChallenge.com. Follett is calling all administrators, librarians, teachers, technology specialists this school year. Follett is looking for the most dynamic programs in the United States, Canada, and international schools to take the Follett Challenge. They want to reward top-notch educators who are designing 21st century teaching and learning programs. We did a show with last year's winner yesterday. Her name's Isabel Chipungo. She's from Ocoee Elementary School in Orange County, Florida. She won a lot of money and prizes for her school. They used it to stock up their library, et cetera, et cetera. She's a hero, and you can be a hero, too. Okay, go over, show Follett how you're preparing students with the vital skills they'll need for life. A total of $200,000 in Follett products and services is up for grabs, and with a grand prize of $60,000. The website is FollettChallenge.com. FollettChallenge.com. Check it out. Okay. Thank you, Sue Ballard. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and thank you, Follett, for sponsoring. Please go over to our website where this show will be archived. That's education-talkradio.org. We thank so many people for going over there. You'll see our full schedule, et cetera. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening today.